We're going to talk about congregational autonomy. It is, in many ways, the hallmark of the church, and it is something that is, in the same way, very rare in terms of religious groups. So we're going to talk about congregational autonomy. And I want to begin by saying that there are, as I understand the notion of congregational autonomy, there are two foundational principles on which autonomy is built. The first is that every congregation, every local church, the church here at Coburg Road, is independent of any other body. We govern ourselves. No one tells us what to do. We report to no one else. Every local church, every congregation, this church right here, Coburg Road, is completely independent. Now, there are other churches that are also independent. And that leads to the second fundamental principle, which is that every local church is equal to every other local church. There is no hierarchy. We do not answer to Jerusalem. We don't answer to Rome. We don't answer to Constantinople. We don't answer to Abilene. We don't answer to any other body. So let's see what that means. You know, let's talk about it in terms of Coburg Road. Jesus, of course, is the head of what we typically think of as a universal church. That's all people throughout all time whose names are written in heaven. It's the group to which we are added at baptism. Jesus is the one head. And there is, in that universal church, no delegated authority to anyone other than Jesus. There are no elders in the universal church. There are no deacons. There are no apostles. It's only Jesus. Now, that church is, for the most part, invisible. We can't see it. It exists only in heaven. And so one day I would like to go to heaven, and I would like to meet everyone that's a part of that universal church. Comments. That's the first part of this. Yeah, Bill.
A can of worms, I suppose. If we were a bigger congregation and or a nearby community that had no church, and we planted a congregation there, but there were no qualified leaders, would that be part of our congregation, or are they still completely independent?
No, they're completely independent. Completely independent. And I've been in that situation before. Yeah.
Well, the church here actually gave a helping start to Springfield.
Okay, sure.
But they were their own entity. We didn't do any more than help those who wanted to do the good work in Springfield have some benefits. And even if you're paying the preacher, he's preaching to them and doing what they want, not what we want.
Sure. Sure. So that's a big deal to say that if we started a group, we grew and we said, you know, there are a bunch of our members who live in Cottage Grove or who live in Pleasant Hill or who live in Junction City or someplace like that. And we said, we want to start a church there. We would like for some of you to decide to go and start that church. That's the end of our relationship. That's it. And we, in a sense, we struggle a little bit because we have people who join us on Zoom and they feel like they're a part of our family. And in some ways, we have a special relationship with them, but they're not a part of our church. Yeah, Bob?
So one would have to be a member of a local congregation in order to be a member of the universal church?
Yeah. In Acts, it says that the Lord added to the church or added to their number such as were being saved. So when there's only one church, only one congregation, you could say that the Lord is adding people to that congregation when they're saved. And they automatically become part of that heavenly universal group as well. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Yes, but I was just wondering then, so those individuals would be those found in the book of Titus.
Yeah, if we adopted the Revelation terminology. If we adopt the Hebrews terminology, then it's those people who are a part of the church whose names are written in heaven. Same thing, as I understand. Okay? Somebody else? Hand up? Yeah, Carol.
When he said that if there's not a local church, and you may just have two or three people, you can
that's a church.
That's a church.
You may just have one. That's a church.
Okay.
The Ethiopian eunuch, after he was baptized, Philip went his way, the eunuch went his way. He was the church wherever he was going. Now, he wouldn't have been alone for very long because he talked to other people and they would join him. But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
So if we were looking for the work of the universal church, we would have to go to the work assigned to the local.
Well, the universal church doesn't have any work. It's up in heaven. It's not doing anything here.
Okay.
It does exist, but it only exists in heaven, as I understand it. If you look at Hebrews, you're come to the church of the firstborn whose names are written in heaven. Hebrews 12. Yeah. But that's the only place that it exists. Okay, everybody with me on that? Yeah, go ahead.
I think there are those of us, and I probably would be included in that, who had always pictured the church universal as all the churches on the earth. That every individual that is a baptized believer is a member or a part of the universal church.
And those who are dead.
Yeah.
They're also a part of that universal church. So you really can't see it anywhere on earth. What you have is independent local congregations that are kind of a microcosm, if you will, of that which exists in heaven. But see, members of our church are people who live in this area who are alive. We don't have any dead members. Okay? The dead members are in heaven. So we don't have any dead members here. It's this group. That's the local church. That's the church on Covert Road. Yeah, Bill.
Well, if we're members of the Universal Church, It consists of every believer, dead or alive. It's not just in heaven.
Well, it's only the only place that you see it is in heaven. It's the only place it exists. It doesn't exist on the earth. Okay? Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of different local churches. Jesus is the head of each one of those local churches. But they exist separate and apart from each other. The church on Coburg Road does not depend on the church in Salem for its existence. And, you know, you could say, well, that's the wisdom of God, providing a stopgap measure. If the church in Salem decided that they were going to suddenly worship Satan, that wouldn't implicate us at all. In fact, that's the way that God builds in those stopgaps. It's like having all of the computers in the whole world operating independently. If you link them all together, once you've linked them together, you infect one, you infect them all. Okay? Now, I'm sure God appreciates the fact that I agree with his wisdom. I don't think he cares whether I agree with it or not. And that's not Bible. Okay? That's not scripture. That's just deen. But I can see some wisdom here. Now, yeah, go ahead, Carol.
Well, just on a clarification with the universal church. The universal church is what you're added to in heaven, and you accept Jesus as your head.
Okay.
And then the local congregations are the hands of God that have actions and responsibilities and duties, whereas the universal church doesn't have actions and responsibilities. It's the local congregations that are his feet and his hands.
Sorry. Yeah, that is maybe a good illustration. I always wonder about, I'm always afraid of illustrations because that somebody sees the illustration and takes it too far. And I don't think that's what you're trying to do. But I'm always careful of illustrations. But yeah, in a sense, the local church is the, when we're alive, the local church is the only thing that we experience. We have a role in heaven. Our names are written there. We're going there, but we don't have it yet. What we have is the local church. And Jesus is the head of every local church. So Jesus is the head at Coburg Road. He's delegated some authority here at Coburg Road. He has elders and deacons, he has preachers, he has apostles who function as delegated authority to multiple churches, but in terms of what exists today, there is delegated authority in this local church. It's elders, deacons, ministers, okay, teachers. But there is no delegated authority in heaven. Jesus is the head. That's it. That's all. And the delegated authority that exists here exists only in this local church. An elder in Eugene has no delegated authority when he goes to the church in Salem. He is there as a visitor, and that's it. Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate, I guess, how can the elders have authority over an electronic membership?
That's a question. It's a question that I am struggling with. And electronic membership. We'll just take, for instance, those people that join us on Zoom that are not a part of this congregation. How do elders oversee them? Well, I think that it can be done electronically. Okay? It can be done with phone calls. You know, we don't have any problem with elders who oversee the work here and who make phone calls to be in contact with members. Now, they could go to their house, I suppose. They could wait until they're all gathered in the building, or they could make a phone call. So, by the same token, we could make a phone call to other people who may not live in this area that join us electronically. Yeah, Kim.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But, well, if they're not members of the church, but they're of this local church, but they're attending Bible classes or worship services. I mean, I think about Anne, for example.
Right.
She used to be a member of this church. I don't think she considers herself a member of this church anymore. She doesn't live here. But she attends probably the majority of our worship services.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's any oversight there, because it's almost like she's an electronic visitor. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know of another way to say that. Unless she wanted to identify with this church as a member and not live here and attend a distance attending, that's a different issue altogether.
Well, we could still have oversight. And during COVID, we had to kind of
figure
all of that out. The person who is the owner of a business may have people who work for him that he oversees who are in distant places. And he may not ever meet with them face to face, but he still oversees the work that they do. Now, I haven't made up my mind exactly how we can unravel that knot as far as the elders having oversight over people who are attending electronically. Yeah, Carol?
I was gonna, it made me think of Snowbirds. And their membership is here, and yet they're someplace else for 6 months, maybe 6 months out of the year, maybe only 3 months. But you're still a member of this local congregation if you put yourself under their headship.
Okay.
But you have to designate that you're putting yourself underneath their headship. And if you're not doing that, then you are a visitor, basically. And you have,
you have snowbirds who 6 months here, 6 months someplace else. You have people who are in the military who are deployed for up to 2 years. They may be on a ship. They may be on a submarine. Then you have people that work on the North Slope that work 8 weeks on and 8 weeks off. So there are all kinds of circumstances that we have to unravel. And I'm sure that not every church unravels that Gordian knot in exactly the same way.
I give to the local church here, and I am a member of the local church here. But because of my circumstances, I meet with you. They do not have Zoom here. I meet with you because I don't want to miss out on any services.
Well said. Well said. And that may be part of the solution. Yeah, Carol?
And I think Anne is making a big point, because locally she has ties to the church, even though she can't go and assemble with them all of the time.
but she still has ties locally. So if she needs something, there's somebody there locally to help her. And
I
so,
have elders visit me here
yeah.
at home.
Right.
And some lovely ladies that I keep in contact with here, some lovely Christian women. So I am still, even though I meet with you, I am still a member here.
Okay. Now that's a part of it. And it, that unraveling that is a little complicated. Yeah, Vicki.
I have a couple questions just because I've never thought about it, but it was asked of me a few weeks ago. What makes one a member here? Me saying I want to be a member? Is that what makes me a member here?
Well, I think if we look at the case of the Apostle Paul going to Jerusalem, he had been converted. He was in Damascus and was apparently worshiping with them for some time. And I think what happened when he was converted, he was added to that group in Damascus. Okay? And then he wanted to worship with the, wanted to be a part of the church in Jerusalem. Acts, I think it's chapter 9 at verse 22. That strikes me as an important passage, but I may have it wrong. Let's see. Acts 9. No, it's.
Yeah, you're right. Down to 26, starting in 22 and then down to 26.
Okay.
Yeah.
When he came to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples. They were afraid of him. They did not believe he was a disciple. Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles, declared to them how on the road he had seen the Lord who spoke to him, and how at Damascus he had preached boldly in the name of Jesus. So he went in and out with them in Jerusalem, among them in Jerusalem. So it's a matter of, number one, you desire to be a part of this church, and you convey that somehow. And number two, we're willing for you to be a part of this church. Until the people in Jerusalem were convinced that they didn't have anything to fear from Paul, he wasn't a part of that church.
And are we commanded to do that?
I don't know that we're commanded to do that. That's an example. That's the only way, the only information that I can find about how people became part of a church. So I would say that's a understanding the example is important. I don't, other than that, can anybody else think of another example of someone wanting to be a part of a church?
I got a question. I was baptized into the church in Corvallis, and I was there for many years, and always considered myself part of that congregation. And then I've been in other congregations, and I came here, and I was attending here for quite a while. And one of the elders came up and told me I needed to place membership if I was going to be part of this congregation. And I understand, but it's not in the book, I don't think.
Yeah, there is no place membership, but declaring that you want to be a part of this congregation, yeah. However you would go about doing that. Could be a letter. Could be a conversation. When we gather together, you could stand up and say, I would like to be a member of this congregation. That doesn't make you a member. But you have declared your intention. Yeah, Ted.
The elders have to know how they're supposed to be over a flock. Well, that's true.
If we don't know who the flock is, we can't be over the flock.
Yeah, that's another consideration.
We need to establish what the flock is. And so we have examples of that. And otherwise, what is the eldership? It doesn't serve a purpose over a flock if we don't know who the flock is.
That's another consideration here.
And they cannot be disciplined if you don't know who they are.
No.
They are, you know.
Discipline. They can be treated as a learner, yes.
I was referring to the
withdrawing fellowship. You don't have any fellowship with them to withdraw.
But they're not a member. You don't know if they're a member or not if they don't declare themselves.
Yeah, right. So we need to declare it.
It's like an expediency, it seemed to me like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when you ask to join, you're putting yourself, and they have elders, you're putting yourself, asking to have the headship of the elders, and the shepherds know the names of all of their sheep.
Right.
So it's their sheep. They're not a hireling.
Yeah.
So, there is a relationship that binds the two, the sheep and the elders, who are the head. Jesus is the head of them, and they're to be the head of you.
Right. You had a second point you wanted to make, Vicki.
I already did.
Yeah. Okay, Kim.
I was just going to say, I mean, what we're talking about now is kind of our practice and what we do, but I was trying to think of New Testament examples of that. And the one that you gave with Paul wanting to identify with the established church in Jerusalem, I think is the only one that I can think of other than the idea that all of these cities that letters are written to, that people traveled to establish churches, somehow there had to be a mechanism in place for these people to identify each other. And I think that's probably how practice starts, is you've got to figure out some kind of a mechanism. And sometimes I think maybe because of the way that we're wired, our brains are wired, the simplicity of the design of the Lord's church kind of escapes us sometimes, because, you know, business runs very differently. Other churches, any kind of a political organization or any kind of a human organization, we build in so many things that either came about by tradition or just sort of expediency or, you know, that kind of thing, or it's the way that the business runs, or, you know, you used an example of a business owner and remote workers. I mean, it's an example, but it's not applicable to the church, I don't think. But we tend to complicate it. We don't have a lot of examples in the scriptures other than what I can think about. Somehow there was some mechanism or something in place for everybody in Ephesus who was a believer and a Christian
to find each other.
To find each other and identify with each other and make themselves what they call a local church or a local congregation. So somehow there has some kind of mechanism. I don't know that it's, I think, again, I think that we try to complicate it because we're human beings. That's what we do. I think God made it pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted.
To the point I was making, maybe about this, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17 gives you a command. So it says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authorities, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account.
Okay.
Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you. There's a command right there. You have to submit to their authority.
Okay.
So what is the purpose of that? That is to establish that you are submitting to the authority of this local eldership.
Okay.
You submit without being a member. And I'm not questioning you on that. That's just what's going on in Mayhem. That's all.
I don't think so. I don't think you can submit to the authority of the eldership. They can't be, if you're not part of that flock, they can't be responsible for you. Right. I can't be responsible for somebody who's visiting. Who I don't know. Who I can't get to them because they're not going to be here long enough for me to do that.
And just because I'm here for 10 years doesn't make me a member.
Well, if you've chosen to submit to my authority or our authority, then that makes you a member.
I think there ought to be a declaration of, in some way. And yeah, we complicate it. Like Kim said, we complicate it. You know, if you think about it this way, the church where the unit eventually landed, it started with the eunuch. It started with one. He converted somebody else. Okay? He knew them. They converted somebody else. This second person knew the third person. Is it possible that somebody got a hold of the Bible and on their own just decided that they wanted to be a Christian? Yeah. Who knew them? Nobody. So I don't mean to complicate it. And in the typical circumstance, it's going to be like Paul wanting to associate himself with the church in Jerusalem. They said no. And Barnabas said, well, I know Paul. Let me tell you about him. And then they changed their mind. Okay. So that, I think there's a simple way that happens generally. And then there are all kinds of complicated situations that can arise. But you just declaring that you want to be a part of this group doesn't make you a part of this group. Dean, are you?
Yeah, just an example of that. We had what I would consider an unruly member. Ted knows what I'm talking about. We had an unruly member. And that member bounced around from church to church, but became a member here. But so this individual asked to be a member here. She was granted that, but then would not submit to the eldership.
Yeah.
And so she was basically told, you're not a member here. And what that being a member here is you know, if I'm just a visitor, let's say I come three times a week, I'm here, I enjoy the service, I get something out of the service, but the things that the church provides for its members don't apply to me. My wants and wishes for how we run our classes and those types of things, I have no say in them. I'm not a member of this congregation. And the congregation doesn't have to take responsibility for me when I'm out in the world and I'm acting up and they say, isn't he a member of that Pilgrim Road Church of Christ? And our elders can stand up and say, no, he's not. No, he's not. So this individual went head to head with the elders, did their own thing, fought the system, created havoc. And so then when they came back around later on, they sat down with the eldership, wanted to become a member again, and they were told no, because they hadn't changed any of those types of things. That's our eldership has that right as shepherds over this flock. But if I'm just someone that comes in and sits down and warms a pew and then leaves, I can do that for 10 years. I'm not trying to lead prayers. I'm not participating in the service. I'm not teaching classes. I'm just a sponge. I just come in and I take, and then I leave. I don't fall under that purview of the eldership. I'm not a member.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Kim?
Your example of the Ethiopian nobleman that goes back home and they're sort of a solitary Christian, or can somebody just pick up the Bible in this day and age, pick up the Bible, read it, become a Christian? Absolutely, 100%. But I think that as that person studies and learns more about this type of thing and understands the scriptures, they'll understand pretty quickly that you're not an island unto yourself, that there's God created us to be in community. So they would identify with a group at some point, and maybe they live very remotely, and maybe it's a matter of converting other people and teaching other people, but you're not going to be by yourself for very long.
That's true.
I do believe that if you have the right mindset. If you're the type of person that says, well, I'm going to just hang out there, but I don't want to submit myself to the elders. I don't want to. You're not studying your scriptures. You know what? You're not doing what God expects you to do as a Christian. You're made for community. You're made for other people. And other people are made for you. And in fact, when we kind of wrapped up James in the other adult class this morning, and that was one thing that James just drove home at the end of chapter 5, is you are part of a group of people who love you and care for you, and that's God's gift to you, and vice versa. You're a gift to other people that you're a part of. So that's part of God's provision for Christians, is to be in community like this. And so I do think that, yes, you can kind of be an island for a little while, but that can't last very long. If you're growing as a Christian and learning, that's not going to last very long.
And you're looking for people that you can associate with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lenny. Sorry.
We have an example in the Bible how Paul, when he was in Corinth, joined up with Priscilla and Aquila, and also when he went to Ephesus for a number of years, he worked with the congregation to convert people.
Yeah, so
he
right.
was a part of that congregation of members, and it's the Christian's responsibility to join with a local group to work with that group.
Yeah, yeah, and for the most part, it's facilitated right now because we have the internet, and it's pretty easy to locate people. If you didn't have the internet and it had to be just word of mouth, you might be in Ephesus for several years before you happen to run into somebody else and you say, well, I believe that too. You know, and so once you've found that, be a part of it. Yeah, Carol.
If you're a member of the baptized into the universal church and you have Christ over you as a head, he said that he wanted the heads of the local church to be elders so that you might have somebody on this earth to guide you.
Okay.
Whether you choose to just come or whether you choose to have the person that God put in authority is your choice, but it definitely says that you should put yourself into that situation in the community.
I agree. And there may be some indication in a kind of oblique way where the Apostle Paul, remember when he was writing before, he said, do I need letters from you or letters to you? So there may have been a practice among early Christians, when somebody was traveling to a new town, you would give them a letter from this church that just says, this is a good Christian. Okay? I don't know that. That's kind of an oblique reference that I can't make too much of it, but I have been an elder and had people who were leaving the church where I was an elder, and we gave them a letter to take with them. And we've had people come and want to associate with us, bringing a letter from another congregation. And maybe there's some value to that. Yeah, Harold.
Well, that's what Barnabas did.
Yeah, Barnabas was his letter.
He vouched for that. And during that time of persecution, you didn't want to have a Judaizing Christian who was going to come in your midst and point out later all of the people who you are and have all your possessions taken away. So you wanted to know who was coming in here and whether they were a troublemaker or they could ruin you.
Hey, their fear was well-founded. Okay. Remember what Paul had been doing. He left Jerusalem. He was well known in Jerusalem. He left there going looking for Christians so he could put them in prison. Okay, so there were probably Christians in Jerusalem that knew about what Paul was all about. So yeah, it was well founded. Let me make one other point, and we're going to run out of time, and this may be a point that we want to discuss more. In the absence of local pastors, in the absence of men who are qualified to be elders, I've seen two things happen. One, because we want to have a church with all of the delegated authority, people have said, well, this is the best we've got. They're not really qualified to be elders, but we'll appoint them to be elders anyway.
Yeah.
Can't do that. The other thing that I have seen happen is the preacher gets to be the elders. That's called a pastor system. No, that's never described anywhere. Nor is it described anywhere that you say, well, we don't have elders. We're going to create our own delegated authority, and we're going to have a men's business meeting. I find that described nowhere in the Bible. You either have elders or you don't. If you don't, the church still exists. Churches existed when Paul went on his first missionary journey and he set up some churches, which just basically means he converted some people in a particular city. They started meeting together. They didn't have elders. They were still a complete church. And if there was someone who came to the church and said, I'd like to be a part of it, it was up to the church to decide. I can't see any, I find no reference to men's business meetings. Okay? And I've been where we didn't have elders. So, yeah, when you don't have elders, you just don't have the delegated authority. Yeah.
Well, the question is, how does something get taken care of then?
The church takes care of it.
But how does somebody decide that?
The church decides.
All of the members, not just the men.
The church decides. Just as the church looks for people to put over the job of distributing food to the needy widows in Acts 6. Yeah, James.
The U of O has a church, a Christ group. You know, they meet every Sunday, and it's just a bunch of young men and women, so...
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily say they are qualified to be elders, any of them.
That's possible. One of the qualifications for an elder is that he's not a novice. Okay. That doesn't mean not a novice in terms of being an adult. It's a novice in terms of knowledge. When we become Christians, we're babes in Christ, and we have to develop that knowledge. And you develop that knowledge, and yes, you will get to the point where you might be qualified to be an elder. But there are a lot of churches that exist that don't have elders. And they are just as complete without elders as we are here, and we have elders and deacons. Yeah.
I remember Jerry Bassett saying that in the Philippines, if a young man wasn't qualified to be an elder by the age of 40 or 45, they didn't live another 10 years. So you couldn't wait until somebody was 50, 55, 60 because there was an age requirement, requirement.
There's no age requirement. There are some people that are 70 years old that are still novices. And there are some people that are 30 years old who aren't. That's not dependent upon age. Okay? Now, a 30-year-old may not be married, have children, all of that. There are a lot of other qualifications besides that one for a man to serve as an elder. But age has nothing to do with it. Okay? Boy, we're out of time. We made major progress here. We got through the first slide. And these are just some foundational ideas. Okay. So we'll continue the discussion next week. Thank you for your input. Thank you for your questions. And again, let it be said that I don't know all the answers to this. There are some questions that we have to resolve. We may resolve it in one way. Other churches may choose to resolve it in a different way. That's okay. We choose to have Zoom. Other churches choose not to have Zoom. That's fine. Okay? We are independent. Nobody tells us what we have to do. And if you talk to your friends about the church here at Covert Grove, they'll say, well, you know, where's your headquarters, Covert Grove? And they're shocked that you don't answer to some other larger entity. Okay. Thank you again for your kind comments, and we'll continue this next week.